This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
This morning, I'd like to talk about acceptance and forgiveness, two concepts that are closely linked, but I think ultimately very different. And I'd like to sort of explore their relationship and how we practice with them. Traditionally, acceptance is at the very core of our practice, in the sense that we practice being with what is, moment after moment. We could say acceptance is the practice of non-separation, and the practice of working with and through our expectations and judgments about how things are. It was really the core of the way Joko taught. She asked us always to be conscious of our expectations, how they conflicted with what was actually happening, and in a way to use the reality of what's happening as a kind of grindstone to wear out our expectation. From this perspective, we could say that practice is very largely a matter of learning to behave well when we're treated badly. And that's because from a self-centered point of view, life is always going to treat us badly. Because life is going to display a resistance to control and expectation at every turn. Impermanence and interdependency is going to guarantee they're always going to be bumping up against things going badly from our own point of view. In a way, it's at the heart of what, you know, Joko is famously saying, relationships don't work. We can never expect the other person to simply conform to our needs or expectations as we self-centeredly conceive of them. Rather, that other person, you know, in her terms, is there for us to practice with, to over and over deal with the unpredictability or uncontrollability of otherness. In line with the Kyogen Carlson chapter we've been discussing, we can say that the use of forms in practice is one of the vehicles we use to cultivate acceptance. Forms are by their nature arbitrary. And in our practice, we inevitably have to submit to something that is not of our liking or creation or under our control, but it's just the way we do it. And if you ask, why do we do it that way? The basic answer is, that's the way we do it. And we can make up reasons why we do it one way or not the other. But in the long run, the point is not for us to figure out the best way to do it, but to just do it, to just let ourselves be contained and carried along by the forms. And in terms of acceptance, you know, our practice is watching all the ways in which we judge or complain or resist or think we have a better idea of how it should be. You know, if only I ran the place, I would do it this way, not that way. Obviously, this would have been more efficient, more sensible. And of course, you know, within certain limits, we do get to decide things and change things. But whatever we decide, ultimately we want to simply put them in place and let that be the container for our practice, a container that's inevitably going to chafe sometimes. And that chafing is not an obstacle to the practice, but the practice itself. In a lot of ways, our practice is about coming to see form and structure not as a constraint on our freedom, but the very form freedom needs to take. That freedom is exercised within structure, not in terms of eliminating all sorts of structure. Form enables us to practice. And it is the vehicle in which we develop discipline and resilience and acceptance. This basic, deep acceptance of just staying with what's happening moment after moment. Now, I said that acceptance can be thought of as our way of behaving well when we're treated badly. We're trying to be non-separate from life as it is, rather than being in constant opposition or complaint against life. But there are times when I think we would all say that something about that seems insufficient or one-sided. Let's imagine that my son and his friends, when they were young, are playing baseball in the backyard. One of the boys hits the baseball and it goes over the fence and smashes through our neighbor's kitchen window. Now, at one level, we can certainly say, accidents happen. Things like that are, you know, probably unavoidable in this life, right? We can get that. Kids play games, sometimes gets out of hand, sometimes ball breaks a window. So at one level, I just accept the reality of that. What does my neighbor think? It's his window. If I go over there and just say, well, accidents happen, he may be left feeling, hey, wait a minute, who's going to pay for the window? Who's going to fix it? And then he's in a position of where simple acceptance of, well, you know, shit happens is not a very satisfying response. Now, we could say, from the perspective of perfect non-separation, when my son's baseball breaks a neighbor's window, I treat it as if it was my own window, and I immediately move to fix it. But maybe I don't have that pure sense of things, or maybe my neighbor doesn't. And in any case, there's a way in which it would seem right that my neighbor expects something from me when this kind of accident happens. And that's that legitimate expectation, I think, is where we go beyond the things that Joko emphasized, which is really a practice of having no expectations at all. What my neighbor seems entitled to expect is that I acknowledge that damage has been done and that I make some effort to repair it. And if I come over and I apologize, and if I offer to pay for the window, or I even offer to repair the window myself and save them the trouble of having to do all that, then the neighbor is in a position of saying, that's all right, I understand, I forgive you, right? And that's a distinction I wanted to make between acceptance and forgiveness. Because acceptance, as we usually talk about it in Buddhist terms, is a kind of practice that we do sort of on our own. We can sort of have it be either a one-person kind of practice or a practice of non-separation. But in a way, it feels like something that we do internally. Forgiveness, on the other hand, I think is, at least in one version of it that I'm trying to describe here, essentially relational. It operates in this world of separation and difference. It doesn't solve things by dissolving difference and operating just from a position of non-separation. But it operates at this relative level of wrongdoing, debt, acknowledgement, and reparation. None of those things are particularly Buddhist ideas. But I think that we could do well to remember to import them once in a while. I think that while we want to focus our practice on our own expectation and reactivity, when dealing with one another, dealing in the world, there's some point at which we have to allow the legitimacy of expectation. You know, Joko was often confronted with this, you know, sort of saying, well, what if you do, what if you're in a an abusive relationship? Can't just have no expectations of how you should be treated. And she would say, well, of course, you know, if you're in an abusive relationship, just get out of there, right? And so there was a level at which she would say the practice of no expectations is not supposed to be a incomplete violation of a law of common sense. She herself was in abusive relationships that she had to get out of, both in her marriage and in her relationship with her teacher. So there's some things, as they say, up with which you should not put. But I think what that means is that no matter how much we want to talk about acceptance or non-separation, we can't divorce ourselves from this relative level in which expectations are part of sort of a shared bond of lawfulness that we both want to take for granted and have acknowledged if it's violated and repaired when something does violate it. There are lots of things that I can accept, but I don't necessarily forgive. I can accept people's bad behavior towards me sometimes. That's how they are. People do that kind of thing. But I don't necessarily forgive it if they don't acknowledge it, if they don't admit what they're doing, if they just try to pretend, well, I'm just entitled to act that way. I don't have to apologize, and I certainly don't have to clean up after myself or do anything about it. Well, people are like that. I accept that, but I don't necessarily forgive it. There's a way in which I continue to say, no, actually, they really need to own up to who they are and what they're doing and what they ought to be doing to make amends. I think that is an unavoidable and necessary part of living together. And while sometimes in our Buddhist literature we sort of act or hear as if non-separation is sort of the universal solvent for all conflict, I think we also have to operate in the world of separation, in a world of acknowledgement, repair, and forgiveness.